The Leslie Marshall Show, the only true democracy in talk radio, of, for, and by you, the people. Live nationwide and streaming live at LeslieMarshallShow.com. Call in with your thoughts at 888-6-LESLIE.
Here to set you free. How you doing? I'm Leslie Marshall. Welcome and happy Tuesday, or welcome back to the only true democracy and talk. I know a lot of people tuned in to see me on Outnumbered earlier today, but the hearings with Anthony Blinken on Afghanistan by both Democratic and Republican senators took center stage, and I got bumped. But I will be on Fox News Channel tonight, live tonight. Oh, God, from about 11 p.m. to 5 a.m. Eastern time. That's a little 2 a.m. my time, so I'm not staying up all night on this coast. With the up-to-date recall election analysis, right now, Gavin Newsom is favored to win. And where's my sticker? Did I throw it out? I think I did. I threw out my sticker. I voted. I handed in both my husband and my. I did not fill his out. He did and gave it to me to drop off in the ballot box down at the park down the street from us. They have a box near where people vote, near one of the voting stations, as well as the library. And I dropped that off yesterday. We've got a busy show today. Brad Bannon's going to be in the house a little bit later. But first up, let's check what's ripped from the Senate Democrats, speaking of senators, have reached a deal on revised voting rights legislation. By the way, I saw a tweet from Stacey Abrams, and she is thumbs up all in on this. There is a major roadblock that remains in the evenly divided chamber, with Republicans ready to halt the bill's progress, no surprise. Now, the package is the latest attempt by Democrats to counteract Republican-led measures at the state level to restrict voting access and alter election administration. The new legislation that was unveiled this morning was unveiled by Minnesota Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar and several co-sponsors, building off a framework that was originally opposed by one of the senators who's always the sticking point, and that is, I believe, a Republican Democrat of clothing, Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat from West Virginia. He opposed the earlier sweeping measure from his party. He didn't like the price tag and some other things in it, despite the fact that people in his state of West Virginia favor it, if you look at the polls. But anyway, along with Manchin, the new bill's co-sponsors are Democratic Senators Ralph Warnock of Virginia, John Tester of Montana, Tim Kaine of Virginia, Jeff Merkley of Oregon, Alex Padilla of California, along with Maine Independent Senator Angus King. Now, Republicans have been united in opposition to what they call a federal takeover of state election policy. With an evenly divided Senate, a GOP filibuster stands in the way of Democrats, and their effort would fall short of that 60 votes needed to move the measure forward. Now, the new legislation is called the Freedom to Vote Act. It includes many provisions from Democrats sweeping For the People Act, and that ran into the filibuster by Republicans as well. Now, the revised bill would make Election Day a public holiday, which majority of Americans support, ensure that every state offers same-day voter registration. And you have to do that, because if somebody is like not concerned about voting and all of a sudden they become concerned, or what if you turn 18 on that day, on the day of the election, on election day, right? You should be able to register that day. You can't register before. It offers same-day voter registration, set minimum federal standards on mail voting, and ban partisan gerrymandering among its provisions. According to Klobuchar, the senator said earlier, quote, the entire voting rights working group, including Senators Manchin and Merkley, is united behind legislation that will set basic national standards to make sure all Americans can cast their ballots in a way that works best for them, regardless of what zip code they live in. The bill also includes a call that Manchin put forth for a voter identification provision, but it would allow voters casting ballots in person to present a broad set of ID cards and documents in hard copy and digital form. Now, I don't think you should have to show an ID. Many homeless people don't have an ID in this country, and a lot of poor people don't either, but at least this expands The type of ID that you're seeing in these ID programs in these red states from conservative Republicans. Democrats have expressed new openness to voter ID requirements, especially if they're more widespread and more lenient, if you will. According to Joe Manchin, Senator Manchin said, quote, "The right to vote is fundamental to our democracy, and the Freedom to Vote Act is a step in the right direction towards protecting that right for every American. As elected officials, we also have an obligation to restore people's faith in our democracy. And I believe that common sense provisions in this bill, like flexible voter ID requirements, will do just that." Now, the new legislation also includes steps to prevent election subversion. The statement said it would establish protections to insulate nonpartisan state and local officials who administer federal elections from undue partisan interference or control. Now, a separate Democratic voting bill, a measure named after the late John Lewis to restore the Voting Rights Act, passed with Democratic votes in the House last month. Senator Klobuchar is the chair of the Senate Rules Committee. She has held several events to shore up new support for the Democrats' voting rights efforts, including the panel's first field hearing in the state of Georgia that took place this past summer. And still, even as Democrats work to build up votes within the Democratic Party, Republicans remain largely opposed to any such reforms, and we know, and any efforts. And we know this is because they think that if you make it easier to vote, not easier to vote, it should be easier to vote. It's going to benefit Democrats. Why? Because they are concerned about those minorities. They are concerned about the poorer people in this country voting for Democrats because they know those voters, that Democrats have their back with legislation that benefits the underprivileged and underserved in our nation. That said, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat of New York, has said the chamber will proceed anyway to illustrate the party's solidarity, showing the unity of Democrats surrounding the effort. He filed a procedural motion before the August recess to take up the plan during the current work period. The Senate did return this past Monday from its break. Some supporters say the move will help raise the temperature in the debate to abolish this legislative filibuster, although members such as Manchin repeatedly have said they remain opposed to such an action. I got to say, right now, as a Democrat, I'm not. But then I know, be careful what you wish for. It can come back to bite you. We may not always be in power. As sad as that is, it's probably a true statement. Let's rip another. In one of the worst years ever for the economy and labor market, America's poverty rate dropped per one measure that takes into account pandemic-era aid, according to the government today. Now, this underscores the colossal impact stimulus checks, expanded unemployment payments, and other benefits had on households this past year in 2020, even as millions lost jobs. Without those checks and other safety nets like Social Security, the poverty rate jumped for the first time in 5 years by one percentage point to 11.4%. The big picture here is that the poverty rate typically cited each year focuses solely on cash income. An alternate rate that includes major aid programs took on new significance given the flood of pandemic-era stimulus that was injected into the economy. The measure fell to 9.1%. That is the lowest poverty rate since the government started publishing this rate and this estimate back in 2009. Stimulus checks lifted. Absolutely. Stimulus checks lifted nearly 12 million Americans out of poverty, while expanded unemployment benefits lifted over 5 million. There was no statistically significant change in the uninsured rate last year from 2018. Data shows if someone lost their job, they were able to get coverage through Medicaid or other heavily subsidized individual health insurance markets. All in all, that's all good news. Let's rip another. According to Political Morning Consult poll, by a margin of 58% to 36%, Americans support requiring employers with 100 or more employees to mandate COVID vaccinations or weekly testing. By a margin of 60% to 34%, Americans support requiring most health care workers to get vaccinated with an option to opt out. Let's rip another. Now, Republicans' sweeping denunciations of President Biden's plan to force more people to get vaccinated against the coronavirus are raising concerns among public health experts, as this heated criticism could fuel a broader rejection of other vaccine requirements, including those put in place by schools and the military, as the issue of inoculations becomes increasingly political. Over the weekend, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, Republican from my state here in California, declared on Twitter there should be, quote, no vaccine mandates. Of course, he would say that. More than a dozen other prominent Republicans in Congress and in the states have made similarly defiant statements in recent days. often using inflammatory rhetoric. In South Carolina, Governor Henry McMaster pledged to fight Biden and Democrats, quote, to the gates of hell, coronavirus vaccine mandates, while Representative Elise Stefanik of New York condemned Biden's recent mandate. Oh, shut up and go take care of your baby, as authoritarian in the work of a power-hungry government. And Jim Banks in Indiana declared in a tweet Sunday even that vaccines are un-American. Now, I think what's un-American is putting the middle finger up to the doctors and nurses and frontline healthcare workers who are stuck with those body bags, who are stuck with those ICUs. We have half a dozen conservative talk show hosts now that have said, don't take the vaccine, that got COVID and now have died. Six of my colleagues, seriously. I'm Leslie Marshall. That's what's ripping the headlines. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with more rip from the headlines and then another break, and Brad Bannon will be our guest later. Stick around. Don't go away.
Follow Leslie on Twitter. Just go to www.twitter.com/LeslieMarshall, and we'll be sure to share your tweets.
We are back. How you doing? I'm Leslie Marshall. Welcome or welcome back. Only true democracy and talk. Let's continue with what is ripped from those headlines. Moving my cursor here. 2 days after the January 6th attacks on the U.S. Capitol, President Donald Trump's military advisor, Joint Chiefs Chairman General Mark Milley, single-handedly took top. I got to say, this guy, in my opinion, is truly a patriot. And truly, people always say, you're not a patriot. This is a patriot. This is an American hero. He didn't care about party. He didn't care, quite frankly, about chain of command. He cared about this country. He cared about our safety. And General Mark Milley single-handedly took top secret action to limit Donald Trump from potentially ordering a dangerous military strike or launching nuclear weapons. That is according to Peril. Peril is the new book that is out by legendary journalist Bob Woodward and veteran Washington Post reporter Robert Costa. Now, Woodward and Costa write that Milley, deeply shaken by January 6th assault, was concerned, and I quote, was certain that Trump had gone into a serious mental decline in the aftermath of the election, with Trump now all but manic, screaming at officials and constructing his own alternate reality about endless election conspiracies. Milley was worried that Trump could, quote, go rogue, the authors wrote, and, quote, you never know what a president's trigger point is, Milley told his senior staff, according to the book. Now, in response, Milley took extraordinary action. He called a secret meeting in his Pentagon office on January 8th, 2 days later, to review the process for military action, including launching nuclear weapons. Speaking to senior military officials in charge of the National Military Command Center, the Pentagon's war room, Milley instructed them not to take orders from anyone unless he was involved. And that included the President of the United States. Quote, no matter what you are told, you do the procedure. You do the process. And I'm part of that procedure, Milley told the officers, according to the book. He then went around the room, looked each officer in the eye, and asked them to verbally confirm they understood. So nobody could say, I didn't hear you. I didn't agree to that. Got it? Milley asked, according to the book. Yes, sir. Milley considered it an oath, according to the authors. Peril is based on more than 200 interviews with firsthand participants and witnesses. It paints a chilling picture of Trump's final days in office. The book, Woodward's third on the Trump presidency, recounts behind-the-scenes moments of a commander-in-chief unhinged and explosive, yelling at senior advisors and aides as he desperately sought to cling to power. It also includes exclusive reporting on the events leading up to January 6th and Trump's reaction to that insurrection, as well as newly revealed details about Trump's January 5th Oval Office showdown with then-Vice President Mike Pence. Woodward and Costa obtained documents, calendars, diaries, emails, meeting notes, transcripts, and other records. The book also examines Joe Biden's decision to run for office again, the first 6 months of his presidency, why he pushed so hard to get out of Afghanistan, and how he really feels about Trump. CNN obtained a copy of Peril ahead of its release, and that is September 21st. Milley's fear was based on his own observations of Trump's erratic behavior. His concern was magnified by the events of January 6th and the extraordinary risk that the situation posed to U.S. national security, the authors write. Milley had already backed had two back channel phone calls with China's top general. Okay, two phone calls with the top general in China. They were on higher alert over the chaos in D.C. Now, a lot of people talk about how our allies feel right now with a quick exit from Afghanistan. What were our allies thinking on January 6th? How come Republicans don't care about that? Then, Milley received a blunt phone call from House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, according to the book. Woodward and Costa and Pelosi, I'm sorry, this is somebody you want in a crisis. She is. She is the Speaker of the House for a reason. She knows her stuff. Woodward and Costa exclusively obtained a transcript of the call during which Milley tried to reassure her that nuclear weapons were safe, but Pelosi pushed back, quote, "What I'm saying to you is that if they couldn't even stop him from an assault on the Capitol, who even knows what else he may do? And is there anybody in charge at the White House who is doing anything but kissing his fat butt all over this?" She continues, quote, "You know he's crazy. He's been crazy for a long time." According to Woodward and Costa, Milley responded, "Madam Speaker, I agree with you on everything." After the call, Milley decided he had to act. He told his top service after the call. Nancy Pelosi put a match under that general's butt, and he decided to act. He told his top service chiefs to watch everything all the time. He called the director of the National Security Agency, Paul Nakasone, and told him, "Needles up, keep watching, scan." And told then CIA Director Gina Haspel, "Aggressively watch everything 360. Now, the author's right. Milley was overseeing the mobilization of America's national security state without the knowledge of the American people or the rest of the world. Woodward and Costa also write that some might contend that Milley had overstepped his authority and taken extraordinary power for himself, but he believed his actions were a good faith precaution to ensure that there was no historic rupture in the international order, no accidental war with China or others, and no use of nuclear weapons. In other words, he saved lives if that were to happen. Milley's fear that Trump could do something unpredictable came from experience. Right after Trump lost the election, Milley discovered the president had signed a military order to withdraw all troops from Afghanistan by January 15, 2021, before he left the White House. Are you listening to me? Donald Trump wanted to pull out immediately all troops on January 15, 2021. You want to talk Saigon airlifts, my friend? Please do not blame Joe Biden and say it couldn't have been worse. It could have. We know that. It would have. The memo had been secretly drafted. It's in writing, folks. This isn't people just talking. This is in writing. A memo secretly drafted by two loyals to Trump. No one on the national security team knew about it, according to the book, and the memo was eventually nullified. Milley could not forget that Trump had done an end run around his top military advisors. And if he did it with Afghanistan withdrawal, couldn't he do it with something else? What else would he do it with? Woodward and Costa write that after January 6th, Milley felt no absolute certainty that the military could control or trust the president and believed it was his job as a senior military officer to think the unthinkable and take any and all necessary precautions. In other words, preparing for the worst. Milley called it the absolute darkest moment of theoretical possibility. Peril, one of the several books released this year that have documented the final days and how tumultuous they were of this presidency. In, quote, "I Alone Can Fix It," Washington Post reporters Phil Rucker and Carol Leonig detailed how Milley discussed a plan with the Joint Chiefs to resist potential illegal orders from the president amid fears that he or his allies might attempt a coup. Woodward and Costa write that top national security officials were worried Trump might pull a wag the dog, provoking a conflict domestically or abroad to distract from his loss that was crushing in the election. And when Trump refused to concede back in November 2020, Haspel warned Milley, has he conceded yet? Haspel warned Milley, quote, "We are on the way to a right-wing coup. The whole thing is insanity. He is acting out like a six-year-old with a tantrum." Haspel also worried that Trump would try to attack Iran. Quote, "This is a highly dangerous situation. We are going to lash out for his ego," she asks Milley in the book. Even some of those most loyal to Trump and advisors to the president privately expressed concern after the election. Then Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told Milley that Trump, quote, "is in a very dark place right now." Well, I'm Leslie Marshall. Get the book, Peril. That's what's ripped from the headlines. We'll take a break. We'll be back with our guest, Brad Bannon, who has his own show. And we'll talk with him, not just about that, but about this recall and more that is going on right after this.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of truth. The Leslie Marshall Show.
We are back. I'm Leslie Marshall. Welcome or welcome back. Today we have Brad Bannon, who runs Bannon Communications Research, a polling message development and media firm that helps labor unions, progressive issues groups, and Democratic candidates win public affairs and political campaigns. You can hear Brad guest host for me every Monday from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern. He has his own program. It's awesome. You should check it out, called Deadline DC with Brad Bannon. I really enjoy it. Brad also writes a political column each week, which I also enjoy, for The Hill. You can read Brad's columns at muckrack.com/Brad-Bannon. muckrack.com/Brad-Bannon. That's muckrack.com/Brad-Bannon, B-A-N-N-O-N, no relation to Steve. And watch full shows of DC Deadline at periscope.tv/Brad Bannon. On Twitter, follow him there at Brad Bannon. Speaking of, Brad Bannon's in the house. He joins us. Hi, Brad. Thank you for joining us. Let's talk about the re-election, the recall election here in California that's happening today. In the summer, it looked neck and neck. That seems to have been, I think, AP or somebody said a mirage. When you look at the numbers now, what is it, like 2/3 of Californians don't want this recall. And right now it's looking pretty good for Gavin Newsom to remain governor. Am I correct?
Yeah, it is looking pretty good. I do think, yeah, the polls show, for instance, the LA Times did a poll on that they released on Friday, which showed getting 60% of the vote. Now, I think there's a systematic bias. I think we learned in 2020 that generally polls underestimate Trump-leaning voters because I think they don't like to talk to pollsters. So my guess is that could be an overestimate of the no vote, but probably only by a few points. So, you know, the most recent polls show Newsom in pretty good shape, to the extent to which Larry Elder seems to be already conceding the election before millions of Californians have voted or that they started counting any votes. So it does look good for Newsom right now.
Most definitely. You know, the Associated Press wrote an article and it said that today will be the biggest election since Joe Biden was elected president back in November. And its results may hint at the political trajectory of the country. Do you agree with that? I don't. I'm a Californian. I'm a Democrat. Overwhelming majority of voters here in California are Democrats. That's not the case throughout the country.
No, I mean, you're right, Leslie. California is a big blue state. So it's hard to draw comparisons between California and other states like Wisconsin that are, you know, true battlegrounds. If there was a recall, gubernatorial recall election in Wisconsin or in Michigan, we could probably say something significant about national trends. But I think there are a couple of things that are worth keeping in mind. It seems to me that looking at the trend in polls, that this was a close race back in August. But I think a couple of things happen that should trouble Republicans nationally. Newsom was fighting for his life back in August, but two things happened that helped him and I think should bear note to Republicans nationally. First of all, it seems to me that Newsom's revival shows that a governor who takes strong and effective measures against the pandemic can prosper. I think one of the reasons why Newsom's support has increased and support for the recall has decreased is that Newsom has done a very good job fighting the pandemic while others in Republican states have failed. For example, last week, an average of 300, a daily average of 344 people a day were dying in Florida from COVID. In California, it was only 100. Now it's 100 people dying of COVID every day in California, but it's sure a lot better than the more than 300 who were dying every day in Florida and the 226 who were dying every day in Texas. So I think if you look at the job and the death rate in California, it's pretty clear that Newsom has done a much better job with his strict policies than Abbott in Texas and DeSantis did in Texas and Florida with their laissez-faire and half-hearted fight against the COVID pandemic. So I think that's a trend that should trouble Republicans nationally. If you don't fight the pandemic drastically, people in your state are going to suffer and you're going to pay a price politically. And fortunately, Newsom took the tactic of fighting very aggressively, which he caught flack for, but it's really paid off because California right now is a much healthier place to live than either pandemic, than either Texas or Florida, which are also big states with Republican governors.
Or Mississippi, or Alabama, or many other, or Idaho. And red states with, Republican conservative legislation that looked at the politics. I want to say to your point, Brad, Gavin Newsom was not making decisions politically. And one of the reasons we know is that he would lock down. He would double down on lockdown. He would say mask up. He would say, no, they can't go back to school yet. He didn't cave into the pressure. The only thing he caved into was when things were getting a bit violent in Huntington Beach, loosening a little bit some of the restrictions with going to the beaches because people would be outside. But he still maintained mask up, 6 feet apart. Not that a lot of people in my border Orange County to the south of where I am here in LA County were adhering to that. But you're absolutely right. Gavin Newsom didn't go with the political motivation. He went with the science and the medicine. He talked to healthcare professionals and specifically tied his decisions with regard to lockdowns, masking, any kind of a mandate, schools, et cetera, to ICU capacity. And there was a time in California that we had the lowest COVID hospitalization rate and the lowest COVID death rate in the United States. And we are the largest population state. We are the size of a bloody nation, right? We are the fifth largest economy. That is quite a feat. Speaking of, do you think in addition to people going, well, I don't want our ICUs full. I don't want, you know, body bags and medical professionals coming into our state because, you know, people are dying all over the place. They see children dying in some of these southern states on life support in Mississippi or dying at a very large rate, larger than some of the states around them like Alabama. Do you also think that in addition to COVID and they don't want to see here in California what's happening in Texas and Florida. But speaking of Texas, they also, do you think SB 8 lit a match under voters, especially women voters? We see women voters are really turning out for Gavin Newsom right now.
Well, that's true.
Quickly, because we got to take a break. So start to answer. If I have to interrupt, take a break, I will. Go ahead.
Okay. I think the short answer is yes. The polls in California, so there's a massive gender gap between men and women supporting or opposing the recall. So, yeah, I think that's a big deal.
That was quick. we're gonna take a break. I disagree with the writer of the Associated Press piece, Five Things to Look For in California's Gubernatorial Recall, that it may hint at the political trajectory of the country. Democrats outnumber Republicans in this state 2-1. He does have the upper hand, but still, anybody watching from California or listening, you got to vote. Vote no, I say. But even if you're going to vote yes, you got to vote. Republican talk show's Larry Elder is leading the field to replace him. But this is what I would say. Larry Elder is a talk show host. I'm a talk show host. Should I be governor of California? I have zero experience to handle a pandemic, wildfires, and all the other things in the largest populous state in the nation. If you think I could and should be governor of California, then I guess you think Larry Elder could or should. I'm Leslie Marshall. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away. We'll be right back. We're back. I'm Leslie Marshall. Welcome and welcome back. And we welcome back Brad Bannon, who guest hosts for me every Monday here with his own program, Deadline DC with Brad Bannon. He writes a political column for The Hill. Check that out at muckrack.com/Brad-Bannon. Watch full shows of Deadline DC at periscope.tv/Brad Bannon. And on Twitter, follow him at Brad Bannon. I do. You can read his postings and all of his great articles for The Hill, and also watch Deadline DC with Brad Bannon if you miss it on Mondays, 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern. Brad, thanks for holding and welcome back. Talking about the recall election today. So do you think that Gavin Newsom's COVID-19 policy, in conjunction with Texas passage of SB 8, the abortion ban, is what really is going to save him? One, and two, he's up for re-election next year. Do you think he will have a second term as governor?
I think he's going to have to fight for it. We'll have a better indication tonight to see how well he does, whether he, you know, squeaks by or wins 60%. But I think. You know, I think you're right. I think the tide turned in August when, honestly, I think voters in California did pay attention to what was happening in Florida with the rise of the pandemic. I do think they were paying attention to the threats that a Republican governor could pose in Texas with the help of the state legislature, which enacted a draconian anti-choice law. But I think there's a third factor, and that might give Republicans a problem running against Newsom in 2022 if he survives today. The Republican Party is getting captured by the likes, you know, by Donald Trump clones like Larry Elder. You know, it seems to me Newsom was fighting for his life back in August. Then it became clear in the polls and in the publicity in August that the alternative to Gavin Newsom was a nutball like Larry Elder. And I'm thinking, you know, the Republicans, there are some, you know, well-established, moderately conservative politicians and Republican politicians in California that might have given Newsom a run for his money in the recall, but the best they could do was Larry Elder.
Well, let me jump in for a second because, you know, you're totally right. He's totally the unlikely face of the Republican opponent in this recall election. If they really wanted to win, I agree with you. They would have put forth somebody who was much more moderate, whereas Larry, who I know, and I wouldn't say is like a close friend or anything, but I've known Larry for years. We've both been talk show hosts. You know, we've, you know, hung out in the green room at Fox. I've known Larry a very, very long time. And he has continued and highlights his support for Donald Trump. That doesn't work for moderate Republicans. Republicans have voted for Joe Biden, but may be unhappy with Gavin Newsom. And we've seen polling that there are those out there, a large enough number that signed that petition. Also, he's opposed to vaccine mandates. A lot of people in California are not, even Republicans, and abortion rights. And the majority of Republicans in the state of California are pro-choice, or at least if they're pro-life, they do believe in Roe v. Wade and a woman's right to choose. Being African American, I'm not trying to be mean here, is not enough. Do you know what I mean? Being a minority candidate who loves Trump and is against vaccine mandates and wants to loosen things with COVID when we're fearful of us becoming like Florida or Texas if he were in power, and, you know, is against abortion rights when we're fearful of something like SB 8 happening here in California, as we saw in Texas, I would agree with you. Poor choice to put forth. But it does show that how important and essential name recognition is to a voter. And that's how he got to the top of this list, even though he is less than a third of the support, you know, when you have almost 50 candidates on that list.
Well, it is. And, you know, I mean, he did have name recognition, which gives him a serious advantage in a what is a quasi-Republican primary. But the reality is the Republican Party nationally has been captured by the Larry Elders of the world, and they're not going to have a easy time taking advantage of anti-Biden sentiment if they nominate candidates who are, you know, where the cure is even worse than the poison. And I just think in one sense, this does have national implications because it shows how dominant the Trump wing is in the Republican Party. And after voters repudiated Trump in 2020, his hold over the Republican Party in the form of Larry Elder and others like him in other states is just as strong or stronger. And I think that is a recipe for big trouble for the Republican Party if they do want to take advantage of the opposition that exists to Joe Biden.
No, I agree 100%. You know, so much to talk about with this. First of all, people have, on the right, talked about Democrats or those on the left, Newsom and this whole, you know, recall, which was their idea and cost over $200 million during a pandemic. I personally want to slap each one of them that, you know, signed this petition. We need our governor to be fully focused on the issues in the state, COVID-19 and the pandemic, wildfires, homelessness, housing. Those things are far more important than this recall. This was the worst time, in my opinion, to have a recall. And I hate recalls because you're just saying, you know, you're just saying fangool to the voter and the will of the people. If you vote for somebody, whether it's 2 years or 4 years, you should get your 2 years or 4 years, good, bad, or ugly. And I would say that if a Republican were in office as well. The shenanigans already seem that they're going to come from the right. Larry Elder's website, Larry is already a retained attorneys. And, you know, it looks like from his website, the election hasn't even been held yet. And he's already kind of claiming voter fraud. I think that shows, A, he knows he's going to lose. And B, that he is going to, you know, do the, you know, stealing, the election was stolen, this voter fraud, that mantra, steal that from Trump. Is this going to be the Republican Party going forward? Are they going to say that the election was stolen every time they lose an election because they're not going to win them all?
Yeah, I'm afraid you're right, Leslie. You know, the problem is this shows that Republicans, you know, Donald Trump, Larry Elder, do not respect the democratic process. They are not going to abide by the results of Democratic elections. We saw that on January 6th at the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. Republicans do not respect the Democratic process. And I think that's a sad state of affairs on our democracy. And part of the problem is the Republicans know that it's becoming increasingly difficult for them to win elections because of the changing demographics in our country. This country, within 20 years, is going to be majority-minority. White people will be a minority in this country in 20 or so years, by 2045. Republicans realize it, and they realize that's making it much more difficult to win elections. So what do? They basically pound on democracy in a democratic process. And it's a sorry sign for our great republic when one of the two major parties does not accept the results of legitimate elections, whether it's nationally in the presidential race in 2020 or this year in the recall race in California.
The recall is different. The way we count ballots is different. State of California allows any ballot to count as long as it's postmarked by election day and received within a week, 7 days. Votes are tallied late into the week. Sorry, forgot to shut my phone off. Elections are, it could take more than a month before it's finalized. Democrats largely vote by mail. Republicans tend to vote in person. So tomorrow night, it might look like he's losing. More and more Democratic counting, more and more Democratic votes will come in as counting continues. Very similar to what we saw in the general election in states like Pennsylvania, as an example, Georgia, as an example, where at the beginning you saw in the general election, it looked like Trump was going to win and then Biden was going to win because in some of these states you had the, you know, Democrats tend to vote more by mail and Republicans more in person. Do you think tomorrow night it's going to look like Gavin Newsom is losing or no?
I don't think it's going to look like that Newsom is losing, but it could look like it's a close election. And you're right. We could see exactly. So, you know, I think Democrats might want to take a good stiff drink when the polls close in California at 8 o'clock Pacific time, because the results may not look all that encouraging. But as the nights go on and they start getting in all the votes from Los Angeles and San Francisco and San Diego, you're going to see the Newsom margins mount up. So my advice to your listeners and viewers in California is not to panic at 8 o'clock when the polls close, because the light will shine brighter as the night grows darker.
Oh, that's a wonderful way to put it. Brad Bannon, check him out. Check out his column for The Hill, muckrack.com/Brad-Bannon. Also go to periscope.tv/Brad Bannon to check out his great talk show Deadline with DC with Brad Bannon every Monday, 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern. Follow him on Twitter at Brad Bannon. I'm Leslie Marshall. Marky Mark Grimaldi is both of our executive producers, and we couldn't do it without him. Have a great rest of the day. I couldn't.